RadioInfluence.com.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. I am Jeff Crushell. The con man is here behind the glass, keeping us on track, playing the tunes, and generally just keeping things organized. And we're your weekly source for performance information. Hey, if you want to get in touch with us, go to our website. It's the best place to go. You can find our blogs there, also our social media hookups, Facebook, Twitter, Stitcher, all that good stuff. You can also write us an email, info@crushperformance.com, if you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, or if you have an idea for the show. Let us know. We may dedicate a segment or an entire episode to your idea, and we're always looking for good ideas, and we've had some great ones come up, and we've also had some great questions as well. I'll get to a few of those right away here. But if you want to get to our archives, our podcast, it goes back almost 12 years now. We've had some fantastic guests, some great athletes. We've talked sports science and almost anything you can imagine when it comes to human performance on the show. We are on iTunes, which is now Apple Podcasts, I believe. We're on Google Play and Stitcher. Just punch in Crush Performance there and you can get to our archives and search out anything that you would like to know in terms of human performance. Today, a really big show. I'm actually excited about this show because once again, we see the marriage between technology and human performance. We are going to talk with Keith Law, analyst and senior writer for ESPN, about analytics, statistics, and how it's changing sport. He has a new book out called Smart Baseball. It's the story behind the old stats that are ruining the game, the new ones that are running it, and the right way to think about baseball. But don't be fooled. This goes well beyond baseball. Analytics and stats are now ruling the roost in virtually every single performance, or every single professional sport, I should say. Because it's a big part of the game now, and you can't get away from it. If you're a traditionalist that doesn't buy into all the stats and data, I can understand that, but you can't ignore it. And if you do, listen to me carefully, you're going to get left behind. This data is incredibly useful. I will say this, though. I think that maybe when it first came on, sort of that Moneyball era in baseball, baseball's always been that big numbers game. There's always been stats. It's been stat-driven, number-driven from day one. Interesting to see when we talk with Keith here, and in his book, he mentions how some of these stats have totally destroyed our perspective of the game, and it's taken us so off course that it's probably setting the game back. It's time to recalibrate. But I will say this, and baseball's probably led the way here, we might have gone too far. We like overshot the moon there when all these new stats, it was this beautiful new shiny thing, this exciting new tool. And trust me, it's evolving even as we speak here today. But I think we went a little too far. We started relying on the numbers a little too much. Some organizations went too far. Some of them didn't do enough. And some of them are just right. It's like the Goldilocks porridge story, right? Or the bed's too soft, the bed's too hard, the bed's just right. There is going to be a happy medium here. And as we get new technologies giving us data that we've never had before, I mean, we've got StatCast, we have TrackMan, we have wearable technologies that are giving us heart rates, body temperature, recovery rates, biofeedback, and readiness levels. It's incredible the technology and the data we're getting from this technology in this day and age. But I think we shot too far. On the other side, you can't ignore it because it's incredibly useful information when it's applied properly. Now, the other question is, are we applying it properly? Well, that brings on a whole other perspective when we look at maybe the developmental models in sport, because I think we have to be careful here. It's my firm belief that we could take data of any athlete, whether it's the Corsi numbers or sabermetrics of an athlete, and if you were to give me that athlete for, let's say, 6 to 8 weeks, and we trained something with very deliberate purpose, very dedicated, deliberate training based on a performance outcome, we could drastically change or skew the numbers, making the old numbers meaningless. So I think first we have to understand where we've come from. Then we have to understand where we're at in terms of all the data and numbers and stats that we have. And then we need to decide how to move forward. And the interesting thing is that's exactly how Keith's book is laid out. He looks at all the old stats that baseball's relied on and how wrong they really are, how misguiding they are. Simple things like RBIs, runs batted in, and how misleading that stat is. And on a historical level, it is one of the most important statistics in terms of evaluating the value of a player. But if you really break down what RBI means, runs batted in, it's incredibly incomplete. And I've always thought this. And also, if you look at the stat, the save statistic, you know, the proven closer kind of an idea, man, it can be very, very misleading because one player doesn't win a game. And if you look at the saves that a closer or relief pitcher might have, they can have terrible, terrible baseball performance, but still get a save. So they're misleading in a lot of ways. So maybe we just need to recalibrate, maybe add in some of these new tools and new numbers. So one, we can really evaluate performance better, which would, on my side of it, it's very exciting because now it gives us a clear picture as to what we need to do to help an athlete get better. And that brings me to one of the text questions that came up here last week, asking about specialization in sport and when a young athlete should specialize. This comes from Jessica. Jessica asked, hey, I have a 10-year-old son who loves hockey. All he wants to do is play hockey. We're trying to get him interested in other sports. Is it safe to just play hockey? Well, it depends what you want, and it depends on the young player. Here's what we know about specialization in sport. And again, Jess, thanks for the question. But it's a dangerous game to play. There's only a few sports out there that are early specialization sports. We might look at figure skating as one of them, and maybe gymnastics as another, where typically athletes can be very young and have success. And you know, on average, as you get older, you can't compete with the younger athletes. But again, we're entering a new age of sport where we're seeing these great young athletes come in and not just playing at the highest level of competition, but impacting performance there and raising the bar when it comes to what other athletes have to do. But we're also seeing athletes play longer into their careers. So on the early specialization sports, you know, we could still see athletes competing at the highest level later on. But here's what we do know about specialization. Specializing in general before the age of 10 is a dangerous, dangerous game to play. And I think it's proven beyond a doubt right now in sports science that specializing early really lowers the ceiling of performance as athletes age. Now, on the other hand, if you have a young athlete who loves a sport so much, that's all they want to do, I don't think we should discourage that. I just think we need to do it right. We need a good off-season program. Hey, you know, if hockey's his game, you know, mix in a soccer ball or get him out playing with his buddies once in a while. Maybe it doesn't have to be structured. Maybe it's on the street. Ball hockey, lacrosse, baseball are great summer sports for hockey, and I would just encourage to work that in. Get him with his group of buddies playing other sports. But if you're one of those parents that are, you know, pushing your young athletes into one particular sport, I promise you, listen carefully, you're playing with fire. Now, that is depending on what your outcomes are. If you just want them to enjoy sport, that's fine. You know, if you're looking at high performance outcomes, it's a crapshoot because we know the odds of actually succeeding. They're incredibly low. But here's what we also know about specialization. It's one of the leading factors in overuse, injuries, in burnout, and it's one of the biggest contributors, I believe, to the dropout rates we're seeing in sport, which are pretty much 70% of kids are dropping out of sport by the age of 13 here in North America, which is a devastating and scary number. But they just get so burnt out at an early age, and it has a lot to do with just doing one sport over and over and over and the pressure of succeeding. So Jess, I really do appreciate that question because it's a serious one and you're not the only parent out there with that question. Heck, I have it as well. Dealing with my young girls coming up through sport, you know, trying to encourage them to play multiple sports. And that's the advice I would put out there. Try to encourage other sports, even if it's just for fun. Even if it's not structured, you don't have to enroll them in another sport. But encourage them or get out and play with them. Take them for a round of golf. Take them to the driving range. Go shoot some hoops in the driveway. You know, go ride your mountain bikes. You know, get on the water and try water skiing or surfing or whatever it might be. Just get out there and let them experience other sports. Because if hockey is his game or if baseball, football, soccer are, you know, their chosen sports, Everything else they do just gives them an important context that will help them become a better athlete. Soon, I do believe, we're going to have stats and data on developmental athletes that are really going to help us decide. And I don't know whether that's good or bad yet. We'll have to find out more about it. And we're going to do exactly that right after the break, as we're joined by Keith Law, analyst and senior writer for ESPN, about his new book, Smart Baseball. The story behind the old stats that are ruining the game, the new ones that are running it, and the right way to think about baseball. This goes well beyond baseball. We're talking big data on crush performance right after this with Keith Law. Stick around, everybody.
Radio Influence brings you the absolute best in digital audio broadcasting. We've got something for everyone. Sports personalities like the fabulous Sports Babe, Rich Herrera, and former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy, as they take you inside the dugout. We'll take you inside the world of MMA with the MMA Report with Jason Floyd, the MMA Insiders, and the Valor Hour with Tim Loy and Casey Oxidine. Or you could find yourself sitting ringside with wrestling ring announcer David Penzer. TV law enforcement analyst and former police officer Vincent Hill breaks down this week's biggest crime stories and takes you beyond the badge. Chef Brian Duffy from TV's Bar Rescue shares his crazy life on the road with Duffified Live. And Scott Ledger will always make you think with some dangerous conversation. All of Radio Influence's shows can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at CrushPerformance.com.
Welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crochelle here. The con man is behind the glass, keeping us on track. We're your weekly source for performance information, and today we're talking big data in sport. If you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, get to us. CrushPerformance.com is the website. You could follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush. And if you're on Facebook, go to our group. It's called The Talent Grid. We're posting there. There's great conversations going on, but we're just trying to hook you up with the world of human performance. Today, getting into the conversation, where are we at in terms of statistics, analytics, and just big data driving sport? Well, it's a new age. And if you're not keeping up, the industry is going to chew you up and spit you out. I feel tradition is still very important in sport, but there's a new age of data, statistics, and technology that's really changing the landscape out there and help us better understand where we're coming from in terms of the analytics, where we're at right now, and where we need to go in the future. We're joined by Keith Law, analyst and senior writer for ESPN and author of his new book, Smart Baseball. Keith, thanks for joining us today.
Sure thing.
Well, I've been looking forward to this conversation. One, to reconnect with you. We were both with the Blue Jays back in the day, and after the Blue Jays, you went straight into ESPN. How was that transition for you? I think that would be a good marriage, just in my mind, coming from, you know, inside the highest level of sport into sort of that analytical side. It's an interesting transition, I thought.
They were looking specifically for someone who had some front office experience, which I did, and to help them on what they just saw as the scouting side, because they had a pretty big practice of people who had some team experience in the NFL or even in the college ranks to come and give scouting-oriented content. And when I went to them, I had a little scouting background from the Blue Jays. It really wasn't my focus, but enough that I thought I could give them what they were looking for. And because I'd done some freelance work for them before I went to the Blue Jays, they knew I could write at least. So they felt comfortable at least taking the risk. And for me, too, I knew I wasn't going to be with the Blue Jays long term. My wife was pregnant at the time. I wanted to get out and get something with a little more security, and that would give me more control over my schedule, too. You know, your travel schedule is not your own if you're working for a team, whereas now with ESPN, I have a lot more autonomy over when, where, how often I'm traveling, which is a lot more family-friendly. So it worked out. When I went to the Blue, when I left the Blue Jays, went to ESPN, I did not know this was going to be, you know, now it's 11 years, and it's pretty clear that that's my career at this point. I didn't think that far ahead, but yet here we are, and I'm very happy with how it's worked out.
Right. So, Keith Law, let's get into this. Your background and getting into pro sports, and I want to get into the conversation of the numbers in sports, because when you came over to the Blue Jays, that was sort of right at that early stage of the big number era, sort of you're just right off that money ball tsunami that hit the game. So for you, your pathway to get to that part of the game, how did that all unfold for you?
I was hired in the very end of 2001 when J.P. Ricciardi, who'd been with Oakland, was hired to be the GM of the Blue Jays. obviously, Oakland at the time was only known a little bit within the sport for using analytics to try to drive some of their decision-making. Moneyball, the book, came out in 2003, by which point I'd been with the Blue Jays for about a year and a half.
Right.
And what that ended up doing was it just sort of publicized what we were doing, what Oakland, obviously, especially Oakland, but there was more focus on us at that point as well. I came in with, again, sort of a freelancer's background. I'd done freelance baseball writing, analytically focused writing, before I went to the Blue Jays, and kind of had to beef up my analytics chops a little bit when I went there, especially on the coding side, because I'd never done any, although I knew how to program, it had all been kind of as a hobbyist, and it turned out to be fairly important when I was with the Blue Jays, because a lot of what I had to do with Toronto was simply gathering the numbers. Today, it's easy. Most of the data that teams are working with, they get directly from Major League Baseball or from other third-party vendors. At the time, there was no place to look for most of this data. And so a huge part of my job was, say, gathering data from hundreds of different college websites or taking the limited data we got from Major League Baseball, say, on minor league players, and writing code to be able to get all of that into a single database so that we could actually run some queries. We could actually, if JP came and said, hey, I'm looking for a player who does X, Y, and Z, I could actually answer the question. Today, what teams are doing is so much more sophisticated. I joke in my book that I wouldn't be qualified for the job that I used to hold. But at the time, I was kind of at the leading edge because most teams weren't doing this at all. The idea of even having someone whose primary mission was to work with numbers was in and of itself unusual. Now it's an obligation. All 30 teams have actual analytics departments as opposed to a department of one, which is what I was for Toronto.
Yeah, interesting times. We're talking with Keith Law, analyst and senior writer for ESPN and author of his new book. It's called Smart Baseball, the story behind the old stats that are ruining the game, the new ones that are running it, and the right way to think about baseball. Keith, the number game. Let's talk about this because, I still think it's, if you look inside of the game of baseball, or you and I could probably go sport in general right now because it's infiltrated almost every sport on the planet right now. Not to mention the fantasy side, which might even be bigger business for crying out loud. But isn't it interesting how the numbers game has really infiltrated, when we talk about baseball, sort of this traditional game, and it's really starting to steer how this game operates. And that's kind of what the book was all about.
Yeah, I really wanted to give people who might even come into this with very little background in stats or in baseball the ability not just to understand what some of these different stats were saying, although that's the structure of the book, but also to understand the philosophy that's at least driving baseball front offices, and my understanding is yours too, that this is really happening in other sports too. The book itself focuses on baseball because, like I just said, all 30 teams now have analytics departments. The industry has said, this is how we are doing business. We believe that you cannot run a baseball operations department in 2017 without a heavy analytics component. Now, teams disagree on how much they're going to use it, but using that information to drive your decision-making is a core part of the process. And I wanted readers to at least be able to understand the philosophy. I've given a lot of talks around the country about the book, and I've said, you don't have to agree with everything I say, but if you read the book, you will at least understand what your favorite team's GM is doing. You can see the moves, you can understand the thinking, even if you disagree with it. But if you can't understand the philosophy in the first place, it's very hard to argue against it, to think about these moves. I was just trying to give people almost a foundation, like a 101 in sabermetrics, in baseball sabermetrics specifically, so that no one feels like they're getting left behind as fans by the stats revolution in baseball.
Well, I really like it. I've read the book, and it's incredibly smart. And even for a guy like myself who's been inside the game for, 15-plus years, it's a real refreshing read. It's also sassy, Keith. I'm telling you right now, hey, you're not afraid to call a spade here. There's some great little jabs in there. Like, there's a couple that I just sort of highlighted. Like, reporters in the 90s were apparently as dim-witted as a 10-watt incandescent light bulb. You know, you're talking about certain stats and the use of certain stats. And you have little things like that all through the book. Just trying to think, really emphasize, what was wrong with the game, what's going on right now, and what going to be going in the future. And that's kind of the ebb and flow of the book. Let's go back to the history of these numbers, Keith, and why you think these old numbers like batting average are just so wrong for the game, or maybe the emphasis on those old numbers.
Well, the problem with all of the old stats, so for folks who haven't seen it, the first third of the book, I go essentially stat by stat in the early chapters and explain why the traditional but most commonly seen statistics don't do a very good job of explaining what happened on the field or giving us a sense of what players are likely to do going forward. For some of them, like batting average, it's just woefully incomplete. Batting average has been typically used as the main barometer of hitting. We say the guy who led his league in batting average was the batting champion. Well, he wasn't actually the best hitter. He led in one specific statistic. But that stat has a lot of flaws. It treats singles, doubles, and home runs as entirely equal events. It pretends walks, which we know now are quite important for hitters, didn't even happen. There are other stats like fielding percentage and saves, which are just utterly useless. And yet we continue to trot them out. And even simply by repeating them, we give them value. They become anchors for people's thinking. They see, well, he got 48 saves last year. How can he not be good? Well, obviously, I go into a lot of detail in the book on how you can get 48 saves and still be kind of terrible. But the problem is by simply putting those numbers out there, we attach an implicit meaning to them that people have a hard time getting away from. And I really wanted to go after those and just tear them apart, particularly those most useless stats, so that people could go into the second section of the book and almost with a clean slate to think about better ways of evaluating past performance or talking about future performance in a way that is not then tied to these biases that we get from old stats, that we use them because we've always used them, not because they work, but because that is the vernacular of the game. It is the way you write about the players. It's the way you talk about players. That stuff has not changed much in 60 or 70 years, maybe longer. And what I'm hoping by this book, this was already happening around me, but I'm hoping by writing this book that I can accelerate the process of us changing to talking about baseball in a more rational way.
Fantastic stuff. We're talking with Keith Law, analyst and senior writer for ESPN and author of his book. It's called Smart Baseball. So that's really interesting. And I think, Keith, that's a great way to set the stage here for our listeners, for certainly the baseball enthusiasts. But I think this book has meaning for even organizational people. There are candles of thought here that could really light a flame as to, you know, what's going on in the game or even inside of an organization, Keith, and what needs to happen moving forward. Because I've been a big believer. You know, I heard Buck Showalter. This was a couple of spring trainings ago. Maybe this was 2014, I believe. Mm-hmm. You know, and they were talking about, you know, the use of stats and how the stats and the analytics are now starting to steer managers' decisions, and the fact that maybe even some of the managers aren't even making the decisions on the field anymore was alarming to, I think, maybe the core of baseball. Buck Showalter said something at spring training in an interview when he was asked about the use of statistics in the game and decision-making and the process now. And he said, listen, it's all important, and that's a great tool for teams to have, but you can't forget the art of the game. But you have some strong words in the book that, you know, almost contradict even that statement.
Yeah, well, Buck Showalter ends up playing a pretty big role in the book. As I was writing, he really blew it in the wild card game, the AL wild card game last year, by failing to use Zach Britton to keep a tie game tied and give his offense, which was pretty good, a chance to score the go-ahead run and potentially win the game. He left Britton in the bullpen because it wasn't a save situation, ended up using two clearly inferior relievers, eventually used one of his starters, who was essentially on the roster as a mop-up guy, Ubaldo Jimenez, who gave up the home run that ended the Orioles season, with Zach Britton still standing in the bullpen at Rogers Center, waiting for a save situation that simply never arrived. When I hear things like that, like Showalter, and Showalter's actually overall a pretty good manager and an intelligent person.
Right.
But when he talks about the art of managing, it sounds to me like that strain of anti-intellectualism that has existed in baseball for probably longer than I've been alive. This idea of pushing back against the mere concept of using information to make better decisions. That's what this is all about. It is understanding probabilities, understanding players' talent levels, looking for even tiny advantages that you can take into a game and potentially improve your chances of a better outcome. That's all you're trying to do. When teams shift fielders, and I think everyone, if you watch baseball now, you know that not only are we just doing the big old Ted Williams shift, three guys on one side of the bag, we're moving fielders for every batter at this point.
Yeah.
That is taking information that we now have on where each batter puts balls in play, and we can even find out what he does on certain pitch types, certain locations. We're using data to put fielders in better positions to improve our chances of recording an out. It doesn't guarantee outcomes, but if you do this enough times over the course of a season, you will convert more balls hit into play into outs. That's the whole goal. And if I told, if you phrase it to people that way, they say, yes, of course I would want that information. Why wouldn't I use that? Instead of sort of showing up with a battering ram at the door and saying to people, you've got to use this data, and jumping right into the acronym soup that tends to pollute, I think, sabermetrics for a lot of sports, I wanted to ease people into it and try to talk about it in prose terms. You've seen the books, not a lot of math in it. I wanted to be able to explain to people in plain English, this is a new way of thinking. It is a rational way of thinking. It's using data to drive better decisions so that we can just improve our odds of good outcomes. Well, if I told you that, I can make you help you with data, do your job more effectively, you're probably going to say yes, as opposed to the resistance that we get from the Showalters, the Mike Sochas, and the Mike Matheny's especially, who just don't want to know. They don't want this information, even though we know it'll help them do their jobs more effectively, because I think they're resistant to the philosophy more than even they're resistant to, say, just the idea of more than they're resistant to the specific numbers that they're being given.
Good stuff. We're talking with Keith Law, senior writer for ESPN and author of his new book, Smart Baseball. So point, counterpoint, Keith Law. Let me ask you this. So the analytics has hit baseball by storm. It's infiltrated almost every other sport, and including the national Olympic levels in terms of data and, you know, analyzing results. Do you think that we sort of redlined it? Came on, it was this hot new shiny thing, and it redlined. Do you think we maybe overshot it a bit, and now it's recalibrating to somewhere where it's really, really going to be meaningful moving forward?
We've got new data now in baseball. So I have a feeling what happened is teams adopted with the data that they had and the idea of simply using analytics, where the majority of major league teams were using it, but not everybody. That adoption, though, drove Major League Baseball to develop new technologies or to work with new technology vendors to get more data. Now, the StatCast product, which is where folks are getting exit velocities, launch angles, spin rates, sprint speed, that's all coming from this new product that Major League Baseball themselves introduced at the beginning of 2015.
Right.
That was in response to team demand. Teams were made it clear they wanted more data, and they were willing to pay to get more data. Well, so Major League Baseball created this entirely new data source that, according to analysts I interviewed for the book, is helping answer a lot of questions they've had for a long time, particularly around defense. Defense was seen as the hardest thing for teams to get a good handle on analytically. You're still relying too much on in-person evaluation, which I think has its place, but should not be your sole method of evaluation. And now, with this new stream of data from StatCast, teams are finding, I think they're learning a lot of things that we didn't even know before, and they're finding that they can value certain things like defense in ways that were just not previously possible.
Well, one of the things I like, Keith, when you go through the book, you know, we take maybe let's go to the conversation about stolen bases, and just looking at the historical data and what's happened, it could really change a developmental approach for an organization as well. You have a great little quote in the book. I believe it goes something like, crime only pays if you never get caught. And that was sort
right.
of in reference to stolen bases. But we've got all this great new data now. And personally, from my side, from the development side of the game and the performance side of the game, I absolutely love it. And again, I'm still at the end where I'm really trying to understand what it means. I'm not necessarily sure, Keith, that I maybe understand it well enough to agree with the decision-making process that's going on in terms of player selection. But I do like the data to, you know, sort of help guide what we need to do with a particular player, if that makes sense.
Yes. Well, and I think a lot of what we're doing with the new data, what teams are going to be able to do with some of the new data, and I hint at this in the last chapter of the book, is now use it for things that were kind of immune to the analytics revolution entirely. The idea of possibly predicting pitcher injuries, or at least spotting pitcher fatigue before it turns into an injury, because we see changes in potential leading indicators. Like, I give the example of a pitcher on the Padres whose spin rate was declining, and the team feared that it meant that that he was fatigued. Not necessarily hurt yet, but we believe pitchers who pitch while fatigued are at greater risk of injury. That idea of using data to potentially spot injuries before they even become injuries, that's completely novel. I also heard stories of teams in their player development departments, another area that was typically not involved with the analytics guys, potentially taking some of this new information from StatCast to identify, say, a pitcher who's got a pitch that should be very effective, but maybe he doesn't throw it very often. You could now go to the player and to the coaches and say, hey, we want you to throw this more often to see if the, you know, hey, the StatCast data tells us that it should be more effective. Throw it more often, see what happens, see what your comfort level is, see if you can locate it, and then see if you get results. Again, the kind of thing that we just simply didn't have the data to be able to do prior to the StatCast and TrackMan era that we're in right now. And teams are still figuring it out. They're still experimenting quite a bit, which I find exciting because I think we're going to learn a lot going forward. But at the same time, a lot of the stuff that teams learn isn't going to leak out to the public, too, because now they're doing all of this work in-house, whereas the last 10 years or so, a lot of the best sabermetric work was being done on sites like Fangraphs or even on ESPN, was being done in front of the public. Now it's going to be done behind closed doors.
Okay, we have a great conversation going on here. Keith, if you're okay sticking around, after the break, I'd like to look at how the stats and analytics are being used in terms of development. Is it an underutilized tool? Should we be using this data more to project and steer development of players? And also, what are teams doing right now in terms of all this data to help them prepare for games? And where do we need to go in the future? We'll have all that and more coming up right after this break with Keith Law on Crush Performance. Stick around. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
Listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Today, we are talking big data and sport. If you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, go to our website, crushperformance.com. You can check out all of our social media hookups, our blogs, and you can also get our podcast. We are on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play, and Stitcher. You can get all of our previous shows there. And I want to get right back to our conversation with Keith Law, analyst and sports writer for ESPN, about his new book, Smart Baseball. The book's a fantastic read if you're a baseball fan, for sure. But if you're a fan of sports, it's going to give you a great idea how the numbers are influencing decision-making and also the process of development. And Keith, I'd like to continue that discussion in terms of development and how this data might be used in terms of maybe steering maybe a focus of training or looking at player deficits. I do have a big question for you. So you come from a really interesting background, that front office. You've got that front office internal experience at the highest level of the game. And then going to ESPN, you're able to step back and look at this giant industry as a whole. I think it's a really great perspective that you'll be able to share here. Let's take maybe July 2nd international signings. A team's about to invest heavily into a player, and they're looking at the data. How much do you think that data determines the decision-making on whether that's a player for that organization? But also, do you think that data is used at this point to say, hey, look, this player is here right now based on his body of work and projecting forward? This is the big question. How accurate is it in projecting forward what this athlete may turn into?
And we really don't know the answer to that yet, because we've only been using these systems as an industry for 2.5 years. And so a player who was signed, so particularly what you're specifically talking about too with these July 2nd players, it would be TrackMan data on any of those players who maybe worked out in a major league facility at some point. They could turn the cameras on and look at spin rates. They could look at extension. How far does the pitch, this is just for pitchers, how far out towards the plate is the pitcher's hand when he's releasing the pitch?
Right.
Obviously, more extension is considered to be better. If we were gathering that data on July 2nd guys in 2015, they're probably in low A at this point. So we don't really have a good sense of how well they're turning out, of how predictive that data might have been. We'd need a couple more years to get to that point. But teams are using that data to try to drive some of those decisions because they had nothing else. Typically, and you know this as well as I do, the July 2nd stuff, the international department, was like its own black box. there was no data. There were no data whatsoever to use. And there was often not a lot of input from other parts of the organization because it was seen as so separate and so distinct from anything else we did in baseball operations. Now teams at least are saying, we can put some hard data around this, and there are certain characteristics that we would expect would hold true. So for a 16-year-old, if you're looking at his extension towards the plate, that might get a little better because obviously the pitcher might grow, but at the very least, we know this is something he has now that is likely to stay going forward, as opposed to things like exit velocity off a hitter's bat, which you might evaluate that for a 16 or even a 15-year-old, but you know that's going to change. He's going to get bigger and he's going to get stronger. And, and it might be that the thing that always worries me too is if you're evaluating, because most of these kids are scouted when they're 15 or 14 and then locked up to deals that they sign when they turn 16, if you simply sign to the guys with the best exit velocities as at 14 or 15-year-olds, are you actually signing the best players or are you simply signing the kids who hit their growth spurts first? And it turns out the better players are actually still scrawny and haven't quite gotten into their sort of their adult muscle strength at that point. And you might miss a lot of the best players because you're looking at present ability rather than thinking about how this is going to project going forward.
Oh, Keith Law, you are preaching to the choir here, my good man. Preaching to the choir. We're talking with Keith Law, analyst and senior writer for ESPN. That is a great conversation, Keith, and I really do appreciate that because I think a lot of kids even get discouraged or parents get discouraged. And I do believe we're probably losing more talent than we're actually getting our hands on just by looking at those numbers, especially early on. I think that's a really good, really good point. So let's jump forward. Let's look at what's happening in baseball right now. You know, I just wrote a little article at midpoint of the season. I really enjoy just looking at the game and where teams are at from a team perspective, you know. And this year I just sort of compared team payrolls to team performance in the first half. We'll see how it pans out in the second half. But it's a real crapshoot up there, I find. You know, despite all the data and all the numbers that we have, you still have these crazy things like the Milwaukee Brewers, for example.
Yes, and we're seeing a lot of teams that are defying expectations this year. I would say the Brewers, I'd put the Rockies in that category, even the Royals, who, frankly, I look at the Royals, I say, this team really isn't very good, right? The offense in particular is pretty bad, and yet they've been able, maybe it's through luck, maybe it's through managing skill, I doubt it. I think a lot of it is through run prevention, which the Royals are still pretty good at. They've managed to at least keep themselves in the race long enough to that. Now we're in late July. If you're still within spitting distance of a playoff spot, you're probably buying. And then you can really change the fortune of your team because of the extra wild card spot in particular. We see more teams buying. It's a lower bar of entry to get into the playoffs, and we're seeing more teams potentially at least looking to add something that can help get them into the postseason. And it, particularly once you get to this point where we've got, 50, 60 games left, your payroll doesn't matter that much. Even the preseason expectations really don't matter anymore. Any wins you've got, you always say the wins they've got, maybe I didn't expect them to get those wins, but they're already in the books. So if you just happen to play a little better than expectations or a little better than your rivals in the last 2 months of the season, that could be enough to get you to the postseason. To me, that's a better driver, a better reason, especially for a team like the Royals where they're at the end of a competitive window. It's a good argument for them to go out and try to acquire one more bat to help their offense. Because the low payroll, the low expectations really don't matter at this point. If you're only a couple games out of a playoff spot and you're in the Royals situation, bad farm system, end of a window, it makes a lot more sense to just go for it.
It sure does. How about anomalies like Judge? Let's take the Yankees and their great young players just stepping up and maybe pushing, maybe accelerating the decision-making and the aggressiveness that whole organization is going to take in rebuilding and getting back to the top. This has been a pleasant surprise, I think, for baseball.
Yes, well, Judge has been a great story. I've ranked him, I think, four straight years. He was a top 50 prospect for me in all of baseball because I scouted him a couple times as an amateur too, and I said, as big as he is, he's more of a hitter than a power hitter. This was a guy with a really good idea of the strike zone. He's, for folks who haven't seen him up close, he's 6'7". He's about as tall as it gets for a baseball player, for a position player at least, which means a bigger strike zone. But he had an understanding of what his limitations were, and he knew how to make adjustments at bat or game to game to try to account for the fact that, of course, pitchers see a guy that tall, and what are they going to do? They're going to pound him inside with fastballs, and then if he shows he can turn on that, they're going to go soft away, figuring he's looking for a fastball in the inner third. he has shown that you can't really pitch to him like that. You kind of can. I would still probably advise pitchers to go that way, but he's good, such a good hitter that he can punish anyone who can't really execute that. And a lot of pitchers can't execute that. They have the stuff, but they don't necessarily have the command or the consistency to be able to do that. And it's why even with Judge's high strikeout rate, which is, you know, he's at the upper bound historically of strikeout rate we'd see from a position player, I'm still very optimistic about him going forward because I think his understanding of the strike zone is so advanced, his ability to make adjustments so good that, one, I think he can continue to thrive with the high strikeout rate, and two, I bet in a couple of years we're going to look and he's going to strike out less often because he's continuing to make improvements, he's continuing to adjust as he gets more time in the big leagues.
Do you think the data is going to drive the pitcher's decisions? Of course it is going to, but the pitcher's decision here in the second half, I mean, we're starting to see a drop-off already. Are the teams catching up and really taking notice of this young player finally, or are they looking at the stats saying, okay, this is how we have to pitch this kid?
Well, so now teams have, and teams, by which I mean front offices, analytics departments, have... Every morning, they're getting the data from the previous night's games. At this point, we've got 100-plus games of Aaron Judge's career, and we can see what pitches he's hitting and not hitting. And by pitches, I don't just mean pitch types, but also locations. You want to consider counts. Is he looking for certain pitches in certain counts? Are there certain pitches that we know he hits at a really high rate? Okay, don't throw that. Don't throw a fastball middle-middle to Aaron Judge. I mean, I don't think that's rocket science there, but obviously there are certain pitches we know he's going to hit with very high frequency. Teams have instant access to that data, where 3 years ago that data simply did not exist. Now they can go to the pitching staff before a game or before a series and say, all right, you're going to face Aaron Judge. Here are things we know that work. Here are things we know that clearly don't work. Here's our plan of attack. And these plans are much more sophisticated and much more specific because they're data-driven than they've ever been in the past. And I do think that's one of the secondary reasons why we're seeing such high strikeout rates. There are other causes, but one of them is that now pitchers are just armed with better information than they've ever had before on how to get hitters out, and particularly what gets hitters to swing and miss. And that's a big change for the sport that I think we are still getting our heads around and trying to decide if this is good or bad for the sport in the long haul.
We're talking with Keith Law, analyst and senior writer for ESPN. Keith, just a couple more questions here that I have to get to you before we let you go. In your book, you allude to the 1987 rabbit ball era where, you know, there's a lot of talk about the change in the baseball. This year, of course, we're hearing a lot of talk, even from inside the game, from pitchers and from players, about a change in baseball in reference to the home run numbers of this year. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that and what's going on right now in the game.
Well, I think it's pretty clear the ball is different. Both 538 and the Ringer RAN pieces, investigative pieces. The Ringer's was more about evaluating actual baseballs. 538 was data journalism. But they both came to the same conclusion. The ball is juiced. The 538 piece by Rob Arthur, which I highly recommend people seek out, argued that probably about 75% of the rise in home runs this year, and we are at an all-time high for home runs per game in the sports history. 75% of that is driven by physical changes to the baseball. The catch is, we can sit here and say the ball is juiced. I think the ball is juiced. And yet, Rob Manfred can also say the ball is within specifications for manufacturing, and we're both right, because it turns out the guidelines, the limits, in either direction, or what we call the tolerance, for changes in the physical characteristics of the ball were so broad that the ball could be juiced and still legal. And I think that's actually the situation we're in.
Right. Interesting stuff. Keith, listen to me. It's been a great conversation today. I'm really looking forward to staying in touch with you moving forward here, especially on the front of the statistics in sport. But just wanted to congratulate you on your book. It's called Smart Baseball, and the line kind of goes, the story behind the old stats that are ruining the game, the new ones that are running it, and the right way to think about baseball. So maybe in closing, could we maybe just get just a short little summary of how we should be thinking about baseball, knowing what we now know, Keith, from your perspective?
Sure. And the word I've used a couple times in this interview is rational. We want to think in rational terms about the sport. We now, things that we've always had to describe in subjective and sometimes in sort of guesswork terms, now we can describe more specifically, and we can value aspects of player performance. We can distill down and get more precise measurements of even things we would call player skills. So how hard a player is hitting a ball, it's not the same as what his RBI total is, what his slugging percentage is, but it's actually giving us a raw base physical characteristic of what kind of contact the player is making. And what I try to drive home in this book is get away from the myths, get away from the nonsense narratives that have tended to drive sports journalism, especially for 100 years or more. Start thinking about things in rational terms. If you find yourself making a statement, oh, he's just clutch, oh, he came up big in that situation, well, what really happened? Because now we have better information. We don't have to lose the narratives. You mentioned Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge is a great story. He's a great story, not in spite of analytics, not in spite of the new data, but in fact because of it, because these new data are telling us he's doing things no one else has done in the sports history. To me, this is only a positive change, and I believe it makes us more intelligent and more engaged baseball fans than we've ever been before.
Oh, great stuff, Keith Law. Hey, congratulations on the book, and we'll look forward to touching base with you soon.
My pleasure.
And there you go. Fantastic conversation. It's interesting to see once again how technology and sport have come together to push the entire industry forward, this time in terms of analytics and statistics. But the tools we now have available, like the StatCast and the TrackMan, you know, these are all tools that weren't available before, and it's giving us information that we never had access to. And if you don't use it, you're going to get left behind. There's still a great place for tradition in sport. That will never go away. But if you're not embracing the new tools and the new trends, you're going to get left behind. The traditionalists are in big trouble if they're not willing to at least look forward and see what this new age is all about. And in terms of data and statistics and analytics, you can't ignore it. I mean, in baseball, as Keith mentions in his book, if you're still looking at RBI and save as real good indicators of on-field performance, you're going to get left behind. There's no two ways about it. It's just incomplete information. And the only reason we're really still using them is because we've always used them. Well, it's time to turn the page and get into the new data. Not just in terms of, you know, looking at performance on the field right now, but from our side of it, from my side of it, in terms of steering development and what we need to do to help an athlete compete and get better in the game. You know, Keith talked about it in the conversation when he referred to the shift. We basically see this for every batter now in baseball. But listen, we're also seeing these stats play a major role in soccer, in football, in hockey. There's so much data and analytics and statistics being used in every single sport that you can't ignore it. It's good stuff. It's a great tool. But I do feel that maybe we overshot the boundaries a bit. It's a new shiny thing. We've gone all in. And I think the industry is slowly now recalibrating back to where it's important and meaningful when used in the right context. I do believe there's still a big place for, as I mentioned, that traditional side of it, but just that instinct, that, I guess, that perspective you get with experience. You know, the experienced coaches, the experienced veteran players, people who have been in the development side of the game for years and years. There's things that they can see and tell that the numbers just can't. So a great conversation right there. Again, the book is called Smart Baseball. The story behind the old stats that are ruining the game, the new ones that are running it, and the right way to think about baseball. And this goes well beyond baseball, so we have to thank Keith for that great conversation. Hey, coming up in the next few weeks, we've got some really big shows. We are going to look at the concussion status in sport right now. It's time to revisit that, especially as NFL camps start getting underway. And we're also going to look at some of the innovations in the CFL. The CFL and the NFL have been doing some great work, and we're going to be joined here in the next few weeks by Crush favorite Dr. Martin Mrazek to not only talk about CFL but also the combative sports and the dangers involved there, and how involved should sport actually be in directing athlete decisions. I think we need to be responsible enough to get information out, but how involved do sports need to be in directing the decisions of athletes, whether it's to get into the ring to fight or to step on the field, the ice, or the court to play? It's an interesting conversation. We're going to get into that with Dr. Mrazek in the weeks to come. So again, I have to thank Keith Law for joining us today. Fantastic conversation. Again, the book is called Smart Baseball. And I want to thank you for listening. We'll look forward to talking to you next time on Crush Performance. We'll see you then.